The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Harris plans on touring a Planned Parenthood clinic in Minnesota as part of her nationwide Fight for Reproductive Freedoms tour, launched in response to the Supreme Court's 2022 decision to overturn Roe versus Wade.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That's the reproductive tour. Is that what you called it, Meg? Reproductive justice tour? Reproductive freedom. Thank you. Reproductive freedom. My gosh, do they love to co-opt beautiful words, don't they? Like reproductive and freedom, put them together to really whitewash a very rotten, stinky tomb, right? That's exactly what it is. Horrible. Absolutely horrible. God bless our vice president. Pray for her. Pray for her conversion. I look at some of these people, and I'm not the judge, but I pray. And look, there is, we talked about fraternal correction yesterday. It's okay to point out when somebody's in error, right? When they're wrong. And clearly, Vice President Harris is in the wrong on this issue. And so is President Biden. Really, it's sad. It's evil. It's demonic. I'm going to call it the way it is every day. People get mad at me. I know you don't like when I talk about this. I get so many emails from people. If you agree with me, send me an email saying you do, right? But a lot of people say to me, oh, you know, I don't like you talking about this because, and how can you say that about this person? You know, they'll go and they'll defend whatever the position is. And look, I'm glad you're communicating with me. I'm glad you're writing. I don't want to diminish that. But I get a lot of fire when I talk about how wrong these issues are. People are willing to bury those moral issues for other things. Yeah, we're having lunch today. Maggie and I sat down along with some of our colleagues, and we were just talking about where we are today. How is it that somebody can advance, promote, accept, embrace these types of really immoral type of practices and ideologies? And my takeaway was this, is because, you know, we have rejected God in our culture. We've become a nation that has really, in some respect, gone to the altars of other gods, the altar of materialism and atheism and secular humanism and all these different sexual gods, these sexual ideologies that are out there. When you reject God, there's a void. The human heart, it will be restless. The only thing that can fill that hole in the human heart is God. That's the only thing. You were created for God. So when you reject God, what do? You fill it with other things. You try to, at least. And religion, politics has really become a religion today. People, if you're Democrat, if you're Republican, whatever, it has replaced religion. It's the modern day religion today, politics. And that's why we see such passion, such partisanship, and such division over these issues. Coming up in a few minutes, I'll be joined by Brian Gibson, Vice President Harris. Couldn't get that out. Kamala Harris is in Minnesota on this tour. She started in Wisconsin before. Maggie, you were just listening. Was it to Kristen Hawkins? She's with...
Well, I saw Kristen Hawkins from Students for Life post that she and a bunch of protesters were going to be outside this specific abortion clinic in Minnesota. But I just saw someone else post a C-SPAN clip of... This is from 10 minutes ago our vice president here speaking at the clinic.
Many of you have asked, why am I here at this facility in particular? And I will tell you, it is because right now in our country, we are facing a very serious health crisis. And the crisis is affecting many, many people in our country, most of whom are frankly silently suffering. After the United States Supreme Court took a constitutional right that had been recognized from the people of America, from the women of America. In states around our country, extremists have proposed and passed laws that have denied women access to reproductive health care. And the stories abound. I have heard stories of and have met with women.
I can't listen anymore.
They're gaslighting us, Maggie. I mean, the Supreme Court took a constitutional right. Show me the Constitution. Print one out right now, right? Pull one up. You show me the Constitution where there is a right to kill a child. I'll show you where our founding fathers said that every American had an inalienable right to life. You show me where it says that they don't. You show me that. It's so frustrating. How did you find that?
Well, I just did a search for Harris in basically an X and to see if anyone had posted videos. I just think it's so interesting. The whole point of the Supreme Court is to check balances, to check the distribution of power in our government.
Checks and balances.
And, you know, so it's like they don't even fathom that they have stepped over the lines and that the Supreme Court has just simply brought them back in bounds.
Yeah, I know.
And they won't accept it. They won't accept it. They're like, how dare they take this right?
Oh, yeah. She says so many are silently suffering.
From pregnancy?
Yeah. What about the child who is silent, has no voice? Who's going to be the voice for the child? Who's going to defend him? Anyway, we'll talk about it. Brian Gibson is going to join me a little bit later. We'll take a look at what Vice President Harris is doing. If you, by the way, if President Biden wins re-election again, there's a strong chance he might. Yeah, we'll see what turnout's going to be like on that day and early ballot, mail-in ballots and stuff. He's up there in age. You never know when God's going to call him home. And if you are ready for Vice President Kamala Harris to be Madam President, it should be part of your calculus when you go into the voting booth. I just, you know, you got to think. I mean, Donald Trump was asked that question, too, about his vice presidential pick. And he says the one thing you really got to evaluate is, you know, how will this person be able to lead, right? Will he be able to fulfill the role of the president? You don't put somebody in that office just because they have a skin color that you think is going to get you votes or a gender. But you put somebody in that position on the content of their character and their ability to ultimately to lead. And I just hope whoever these candidates are, they'll choose good men or women for that particular position. JFK is going to be, or RFK, I should say, he's going to be announcing his vice presidential pick. Aaron Rodgers' name was floated out there. That's not going to happen. It's very unlikely. But yeah, never know. We'll see what happens coming up. Chuck Schumer, who is the Senate Majority Leader, he called out Israel today on the floor of the Senate. And in particular, he called on the people of the only Jewish state in the world to elect a new leader. Schumer, he pinpointed his critique of Benjamin Netanyahu, and he said that Netanyahu had gone way too far in his alleged far-right coalition. And that there's clear unity in Israel for getting rid of Hamas. Of course, that is a terrorist group, and I am with Israel 100%. You need to eradicate Hamas. But let me share with you what Schumer said today. Here's Senator Chuck Schumer. This is audio from the Washington Post, and it made it very clear that he believes that the prime minister, that Netanyahu's interests no longer reflect the needs of Israel or the quest for peace. So you can see now the lines between America and Israel beginning to Fisher, listen.
The fourth major obstacle to peace is Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who has all too frequently bowed to the demands of extremists like Ministers Smotrich and Ben-Gavir and the settlers in the West Bank. I have known Prime Minister Netanyahu for a very long time. While we have vehemently disagreed on many occasions, I will always respect his extraordinary bravery for Israel on the battlefield as a younger man. I believe in his heart he has his highest priority is the security of Israel. However, I also believe Prime Minister Netanyahu has lost his way by allowing his political survival to take the precedence over the best interests of Israel. As a lifelong supporter of Israel, it has become clear to me the Netanyahu coalition no longer fits the needs of Israel after October 7th. The world has changed radically since then, and the Israeli people are being stifled right now by a governing vision that is stuck in the past. Nobody expects Prime Minister Netanyahu to do the things that must be done to break the cycle of violence, to preserve Israel's credibility on the world stage, and to work towards a two-state solution.
So that's Israel. One or two other stories, and Brian Gibson's going to be joining me. Maggie, let's talk about Finland, and let's talk about Russia for a moment, just since we're talking about international affairs. We were talking also before the program about the Russian president there. He did an interview on state-run TV. And of course, you know, Sweden and Finland both joined NATO. So as a result of it, he's going to deploy troops right along their borders, right along the border with Finland. And he said, look, we generally had ideal relations with Finland. It's simply perfect. We didn't have a single claim against each other, especially territorial, not to mention other areas. We didn't even have troops. We removed all the troops from there. Finnish leaders said that Russia has been bringing in migrants from other countries and leaving them at Finland's border as a way of infiltrating the country, and that Finland shut the border down in response to that. There was a lot of buzz also regarding Vladimir Putin saying that he would use nuclear weapons. You know, he saber-rattled that several times. I even saw a response from China in light of that. The head of China said, look, we need to talk about all nations that have these capabilities, about de-escalation. And I cannot support that more emphatically. But here's President Putin. And again, he's calls concern as he threatens the West with advanced nuclear capabilities. Here's what Reuters was reporting. Listen to this.
President Vladimir Putin says Russia is technically ready for nuclear war. In the warning to the West, which came on Wednesday, he added that if the U.S. sent troops to Ukraine or Russian territory, it would be deemed as a significant escalation of the conflict. Here's Putin speaking to state media Russia One just days before elections, which are sure to hand him another 6 years in power.
Are we really ready for nuclear war?
Firstly, from the technical point of view, of course we are ready. They are consistently combat ready. Secondly, and this is accepted by everybody, our nuclear triad is more modern than any other triad. Actually, only us and Americans have a triad, and we have advanced much more than them. Our triad and the whole nuclear element is more modern.
So I mean, there you hear some of that exchange. China voiced its concern. Our Secretary of State, Karine Jean-Pierre, basically came out and said it was irresponsible. And then then Putin came back and says, "Oh no, the West has misinterpreted what I said," and he dialed back his comments. I hope no nation ever even thinks about using nuclear weapons. I'd love to see total disarmament when it comes to them. For every nation in the world. What a different place that would be. Hey, one final story here I want to put on your radar. This comes out of the U.S. State Department. The Daily Wire was reporting that apparently the State Department spent $77 million, that's your dollars, right, on diversity, equity, and inclusion and accessibility efforts in just the past 2 years. And that was just one department. This apparently is going to be a big part of the Biden agenda going into his second term as well. That was one department. The DEI office itself didn't disclose how much they spent, but the state plans to spend, they say, $83 million more in the next fiscal year on the same thing. So Prager US explains in this audio clip that is just mind-blowing to consider that the DEI agenda was nowhere near as prevalent just a short time ago, because it's everywhere right now, and institutions of higher learning to our government to the sports arenas. Things have changed. Check this out.
20 or 50 or even 100 years ago, if you asked someone which of the world's countries was the most diverse, most equitable, and most inclusive, they would have almost certainly answered the United States. Not anymore. What changed? Well, nothing. And everything. Nothing in the sense that America is still the opportunity-rich place it's always been. And everything because the progressive left has hijacked those three words, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and turned them into weapons of mass destruction. This DEI trio makes up the neutron bomb that has laid waste to a good part of our educational and corporate institutions. Given the damage that has been done, it might be a good idea to see what these words used to mean and what they mean now. Diversity used to mean that people of different backgrounds were free to join a group or association. Equity used to mean enforcing equal standards for all individuals and groups. Inclusion used to mean allowing people of every background and identity to participate in a group or association. Now, in their DEI context, these words all mean one thing: applying unequal standards to ensure preferential outcomes for individuals and groups based on race, sex, and gender identity. The DEI movement is not about a sincere desire to make educational or corporate institutions more diverse, more equitable, or more inclusive. If you don't believe me, try having an open discussion on your company message board or at your next DEI seminar about why the same standards should apply to everyone, everywhere, regardless of race, sex, or gender identity. Try that and you know what will happen. You'll be shouted down, shunned, reprimanded, and maybe fired. DEI is ultimately about only one thing: advancing those who are not white, heterosexual, and male at the expense of white, heterosexual men, regardless of their respective qualifications.
Yeah. Well, that was well said. That was PragerU, of course. Hey, I want to talk a little bit about Kamala Harris. We'll take a few of your calls. You can join us anytime. 888-914-9149. You've heard before about the Biden administration's commitment to abortion and how they're making it part of their strategy. Well, the vice president made history today. She became the first sitting president to visit an abortion clinic. Yay. My gosh, what a legacy this administration has, right? The media put it like this. They called it a medical clinic that also provides abortion. See, they don't like the word abortion. The clinic is in St. Paul, Minnesota. It's one of Planned Parenthood's largest facilities in the country, and it's an industrial area of the city not too far from the University of Minnesota and the University of St. Thomas, a whole bunch of different universities. They know what they're doing. Harris was joined by the governor there, Tim Walz, and Representative McCollum, who is just a couple blocks away from this abortion clinic. It is the sickest thing I can talk about. It's absolutely twisted. In a written statement in advance of her tour, this is what Harris said she wanted to highlight: how Minnesota has been impacted by extreme abortion bans in other states that threaten women's health and force them to travel out of state to receive care and to criminalize doctors. Really? I'm joined right now by Brian Gibson, who will unpack it all for us. He is the director of Pro-Life Action Ministries in St. Paul. He's been doing it since 89. He's been in the fight for a long time. His voice is heard on Relevant Radio there in the Twin Cities on WLOL Saturday mornings. You can tune in to him at 11:30 or check his organization out at plam.org. Brian, welcome back. Good to have you with me.
Good to be on the show with you, Drew. Thank you for that tee up.
Boy, it's horrible. Maggie and I talked about it when we started the show. I'm circling back to it because This is a tragedy. They champion this as if though it's a good. I know she started in Wisconsin. I think it was last month or so. Yeah. Tell me about what's happening in your own state. This did not come out of the blue. Were you expecting this, or was it a surprise?
Well, it was a surprise in the last day or two that she was coming here. Yes, that was a surprise. But they don't like to announce those type of events too far in advance. You know, it's the whole Secret Service thing and so forth. And I understand that part of it. First of all, she went to the highest volume Planned Parenthood in the United States. Our little St. Paul, Minnesota has one of the premier Planned Parenthoods in the country. And this location doing between 7,000 and 7,500 abortions a year. That's where she went. And when they talk about this being a clinic that just happens to do abortions, their mainstay is you don't do that many abortions unless that's your primary business. So, you know, it's silly. They should identify as an abortion facility that might do some other things also, because that's really the reality of it. Yeah. The other thing is, you talked about her statement.
Yeah.
Minnesota last January in our legislative session, to great, great chagrin and trouble for all of us who have been working so hard to protect the unborn, our state legislature and our governor passed and signed into law an absolute right to abortion. Wow. In Minnesota. They passed into law a sanctuary state for abortionists to come to.
Shame.
And our governor is touting the idea to all the states around us for people to come to Minnesota to have their abortions.
Brent, how outnumbered are you in that state? I mean, are those who are pro-death, pro-abortion, pro-so-called reproductive justice, are they in greater number than people who value life in the state of Minnesota?
If you're talking about the general population, it's not much different than the rest of the United States. And it depends upon, the community you're in, basically. So if you're in the major metropolitan area, which is the Twin Cities, you're going to probably find that the polling is stronger in favor of something with abortion, as opposed to when you get out in the rural areas where it's really pro-life to no end. So, that type of thing. But if you look at the makeup of our state legislature, they acted as if they had some sort of serious mandate from the public to do what they did last year. They're doing it again this year, by the way. Yeah. But they've got a one vote majority in our state Senate and a 5-vote majority in our state House. So it isn't like they've got some huge numbers going for them. They're just taking advantage of the situation they have.
Yeah. Are you sensing any political will in the citizens of the state to change the legislature this election cycle, or how do you see that going down?
Well, this is where it becomes probably for our state very difficult, because there's kind of a standing tradition. A lot of people simply vote for the Democrat Party because their family has always voted for the Democrat Party, unfortunately. Yeah. So there isn't and there are those that would never think of voting Republican because they've been told to hate Republicans. And, and unfortunately, it becomes a very bipartisan, a separation by party situation instead of bipartisan. Back in the old days, when I first started doing this, the Democrats were the pro-life party and the Republicans were not the pro-life party. And, in the Reagan era, that all kind of started flipping. And now we're in a situation where it's, there's no mix. We did have one last remaining pro-life Democrat in our state House of Representatives, but he's retired now. And so we don't even have an elected official in our at the state level that is a Democrat and is pro-life.
Yeah, that was That was like Dan Lipinski in Illinois. I mean, he actually got primaried. Yeah. he was a Democrat who was pro-life, and he got run right out of the House. Shame on those people. Yeah. I only have a couple minutes. What was the scene like there for Kamala Harris? I want to get back to that. So she comes. I'm assuming she rolls in this great reproductive freedom tour, gets up. Did people come out? What was the scene like? Were people praying? I mean, paint the scene for me.
Well, first of all, we're in the throes of doing 40 Days for Life. So we do the 40 Days for Life at this location.
That's great.
Have been doing that forever. So there were already people out there. Plus, we've got several counselors who are out there every day when women are going for abortion. So we got them. And then just a whole bunch of our people just showed up on their own because they heard the news on the news this morning. And, there were a few hundred people who came and went throughout the day waiting for her to show up. She didn't come till the afternoon. So a lot of people had already left, but we still had a good representation out there. She came, but it was a motorcade that came in fast and went in the parking lot. We didn't see a single person from the motorcade at all outside. They went around deep into the parking lot and around back, and we never saw them. And then half an hour, 40 minutes later, they left in the same fashion. But Drew, there was something really interesting in this, and this didn't miss my eye at all. There were two ambulances in this motorcade. Now, we see ambulances at this facility taking women who have had botched abortions out of there fairly regularly. Now, that's not why those ambulances are there. I'm going to assume that somebody or some people in this motorcade had health issues or something. I'm not sure why they had, unless it was an optic for the ambulances, they thought. I don't know, but it was really weird to have two ambulances in that motorcade.
Wow, that is really, really strange. Brian, first of all, I'm grateful for all you've done. I know you've been doing this since 89. If people want to learn more about PLAM, the Pro-Life Action Ministries, or if they want to even help you, because I know you're outnumbered and outgunned, what's the best way to learn more and maybe get behind your efforts?
Well, our website is PLAM. That's Pro-Life Action Ministries, the acronym, so PLAM.org, PLAM.org. And we've got all sorts of information on our website for all the different events we do and so forth. I mentioned we're doing 40 Days for Life now. The last 7 days we do a Jericho March, so we're doing this every day. And then Good Friday, we have the largest presence of Christians at an abortion facility in the world every Good Friday. So we've got that coming up as well.
All right. Well, Brian, keep up your good work, brother. Thanks for making time for me today. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you. Thank you. God bless you.
God bless you. Brian Gibson, as I said, you can check him out on WLOL in the Twin Cities, 11:30 on Saturdays, head of the Pro-Life Action Ministries there and on the front line of this battle in a state like Illinois and California and New York and so many others that are mired. They're blue states, but they're drenched in the red of the blood of the innocents. That's really what it is. I'm sitting here as I'm hearing Brian talk, and I'm thinking, you know, the only solution to this is God. I mean, it really is the only solution. If his city is so divided, and our country is so divided over the issue, it really shows you this intellectual disconnect from the reality that there is a life in the womb, that it's inherently sacred, that it has a dignity, that life is a gift from the Creator. If you don't have God, it's really easy to justify, use words, and advance this great deception, this culture of death. We need God. How do we defeat the culture of death in this country? Yeah, legislatively, educationally, politically, all those things are important. We need to get God into the hearts of people. That's what we need to do. We need to bring him back to our culture. So pray and sacrifice and instill those values in that next generation, your children. All right, and do all that you can. Need to take a short break. I'm going to be right back. There's one thing, too, and we'll talk about this when I return. Beauty, right? Beauty, those transcendentals, true, the good, and the beautiful. That changes things. We'll talk about that and more when I return.
Your news. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Your news now.
Hey, today we'd like to thank Santi, who's listening in Maine, for donating his 1983 Jaguar XJ6. You can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles, trucks, boats, and RVs by visiting relevantradio.com/car. That's relevantradio.com/car.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's Eric Jenness. What a gifted musician. He goes into prisons all over the country and the world. Brings a little bit of beauty, his music. Really a talented guy. We're going to be joined in just a moment by Anthony Visco. I want to talk about beauty because I think that's another thing that will help change the culture. But before I change gears and before we talk, let me go back to the phones. And by the way, you can join me anytime. Put this in your speed dial. Feel free to join the conversation. Always love having you at the table here. The number's 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Kathy is in California. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Drew.
Hey.
I've been listening to you guys for nonstop all day long, pretty much. I listened to you, and I just heard some of the things you were talking about. Sorry, I'm kind of nervous.
It's okay.
But anyway, I'm an ambassador for you guys, too, at my parish.
All right.
So
thank you for doing
I really love you all. So anyway, I heard you say, we need God.
Yeah, amen.
And that is so true. Here's what I've been doing for the last, I don't know, several weeks now. Every night I pray to St. Michael the Archangel and tell him we really need his help along with all of his angels, because we are fighting the devil here. Is what we're fighting, Drew. That's what I really feel. That's one thing. And then the other thing I wanted to bring up was our wonderful vice president.
Yep.
The reason she thinks it's one of her constitutional rights is because she doesn't know the Constitution. Like,
yep.
She quoted the Constitution about 6 months ago saying that it's about liberty in pursuit of the happiness. Didn't mention life. She left out life.
Yeah, no kidding.
And that was
Yeah,
yeah.
Barack Obama did the same thing. You know, if it doesn't fit your narrative, Kathy, you leave it out, right?
That's right.
Hey, you know, thank you for calling. Because let me just pick up on what you said. I think it's such an important point. You know, for anyone who's just joining me, I was talking just a moment ago about where we are in the culture on so many things, from DEI to the culture of death. And I thought, what is the solution to it? You know, we talk about educational initiatives and legislative initiatives and political action and all the other things that are all part of it. That's all important. But we need God. You know, we need to bring God back to the country by putting God at the center of our country again. America can reclaim its moral compass, right? We've lost our moral compass. It's pointing in the wrong direction right now. There's this blur between, you know, the lines of church and state, and we've lost the importance of spiritual values. You know, our founding fathers, they understood this. They believed very strongly that if we were going to be successful, if this great experiment known as America, in order to liberty was going to work, what did they have to do? What was necessary? Virtue was necessary for the success and the sustainability of our republic. And if you look at the founding fathers, you know, they emphasized not just morality, but civic virtue, personal responsibility. We have lost that, right? The maintaining a free society. George Washington, a lot of people look at him as the father of the country, or first president. He stressed in his farewell address, right? Again, here's a man who could have taken the role of king, but he understood that that was not how our form of government should work. Here's what he said. He said, of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. He believed the pillars of religion and morality, that he thought they were essential for our country's well-being. And you know what he said? He warned. He warned several hundred years ago against the dangers of losing those pillars. You got John Adams, you know, the Ben Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, the father of the Constitution. They all knew. They all stood by this. They understood that for a democratic system of government to thrive, it required not just a sound legal framework, but we needed a virtuous citizenry. That's what we needed. And I think we've lost that moral compass. Solution's God. It's virtue. Let's do our part. That's what Relevant Radio does. That's why we are here every day, to help reorient you, to shine the light on that path that leads back to God, to talk of those things that so often are overlooked, like truth and goodness and beauty, those transcendentals. And I want to talk about them for a moment, too. And you can join me, too. Feel free to dial in anytime, okay? It's 888-914-9149. I believe beauty changes things. It really does. And that's what we emphasize here at Relevant, the true, the good, the beautiful. And we talk about truth, of course, because it comes from Jesus Christ and the teaching of our faith. And as well as the truth of what's happening in the world. I mean, sometimes you don't like what I talk about, but, you know, I want to shine the light of truth on the news and the issues of the day. You know, we also try to help our listeners know the good and what is good. You know, there's these false goods like reproductive freedom and justice, those euphemisms that the culture of death likes to use. We like to bring to you beauty. And it's hard to communicate in a talk radio format, though both the truth and the good are beautiful, I think, in their own ways. But beauty, that is essential. People are drawn to beauty. Millions of people travel to go see beautiful artwork, right? In paintings and architecture and vistas. They're stunned by the Cliffs of Moher in Italy or the Grand Canyon, right? I can give you a whole litany of these things. But we can also be lost, I think, in beauty and even lose our way. And as St. Augustine, he said in a very famous passage in his Confessions, he says, in my unloveliness, I plunged into the lovely things which you created. Created things kept me from you. Yet if they had not been in you, they would not have been at all. Powerful, isn't it? Anthony Visco joins me today. He understands that profoundly. He's a classical artist in Philadelphia whose work is primary in churches all across our country. And I like to promote one shrine where I get to see his work and really enjoy that. It is the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe in La Crosse, Wisconsin. And I would encourage you, if you're going to take a pilgrimage around this country, yeah, go to the church-approved apparition site in Champion, head across the state of Wisconsin to La Crosse, and check out some incredible beauty. He teaches art in Florence, Italy. Check him out at anthonyvisco.com. That's his website. And Anthony, thanks for taking time to join us today. It's great to have you with me.
Thank you, Drew, for having me on again. It's good to always hear you.
Yeah, it is. It's great to talk with you. I appreciate it. I thought about this story. You know, I was watching television the other day, and I just noticed how things have changed. You know, people, when they used to fly, They'd be in their suit jacket and tie. The women would be in their dresses. Okay, that was decades ago. Things have evolved. But then you go and you take a look at late night television or award ceremonies, or you take a look at some of these, how people go to church. You know, we have really, I don't know, dressed down, right? We have lost the sense of I don't know, beauty in some respects. I was getting my tires rotated and the oil changed. Saw a guy roll into his oil change with his slippers and his pajama bottoms and a robe on. I'm thinking, I'd never in a million years ago out like that. But we see this in so many different areas. Give me your sense of where we are right now and what leads to the erosion of this sense of being personally well-maintained or building beautiful architecture, because there are some churches that you would think you were in a conference hall, you know, not a house of God. Give me your sense of this and where we are today as you see it.
Drew, I had to learn this all over again because of my particular generation in the late 60s, the hippies, all that stuff, you know. And so when I went to Italy, I couldn't understand why I'd walk into a cafe or something and stand there and wait for somebody to say, what do you want? Or just be able to order a cappuccino. And there I was with my jeans and t-shirt with welding holes in it and a beard and everything else. And I didn't understand how clothing reflects self-worth and how that gets and a self-aesthetic that, and an awareness of that. So it's we went extremely into the private right versus public good realm. And we're having a hard time getting out of it. Even, yes, we see people walking in church with dirty pajamas, essentially. And we can't believe it. But it's happened. And, you know, a lot of times, I'm not blaming clergy per se, but it never gets addressed that, you know, you should dress appropriately. I mean, I remember getting a court a summons to appear for jury duty. And one of the directives was, dress appropriately as if you're going to church. And I thought, I'm in Philadelphia. That doesn't mean anything.
Right.
Nobody gets dressed to go to church here. So, it's really a shame. And like I've been saying for a while, it's private right versus public good. I have the right to do it. So therefore you can't say anything. Well, that might be true, but it doesn't reflect communal or self-worth that we when we all sort of reflect the same thing, there is an aesthetic there and there is a value and it does point to something greater outside of ourselves.
It does. My guest today, Anthony Visco, I want to correct your website. I think I left out a key part of it. It's anthonyviscoartist.com.
It's a new website.
All right, sounds
great. The other one will take you to a gambling site.
Oh, there you go.
Somebody took my name.
Somebody took your name. That's funny. Anthony, I have to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more because I came across an article, I think it was earlier in the week, and they raised a really interesting question about beauty. And in light of what I was just talking about, you know, people worry about the state of our country. How can you make a difference? How can beauty transform the country? And what the article made the case of is, well, make your home beautiful. It said dress nicely. Spend time landscaping, right? What does that do? How does beauty change your local environment and then ultimately those around us? We'll take a look at how beauty affects the minds of people and the trends of the culture. We'll take your calls, too. I only have Anthony for a few moments, but feel free to dial in 888-914-9149. We'll be right back.
Your daily dose of faith, hope, and charity. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, join Father Rocky this September for a pilgrimage to Poland and Prague. You'll visit the lands of St. John Paul the Great, St. Faustina, Our Lady of Częstochowa, and the Infant Child of Prague. Seats are limited. Information at relevantradio.com/Poland. That's relevantradio.com/Poland.
And as you speak, 100 billion galaxies are born in the vapor of your breath, the planets form. And if the stars were made to worship, so light. I can see your heart in everything you make. Every burning star, signal fire, grace. And if creation sings your praises, so will I.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
So good to be with you today. You know, I sit here reporting for you on all that is unfolding in your world. All the current events, the news, the issues, and so many of these are problematic. They lack moral direction. People really have lost their way. And I'm thinking, what's the solution to the problems of our day? And it's God. How do you find God? You find him in the transcendentals. You find him in the good, the true, and the beautiful. The Catholic Church has always taught that these transcendentals, they're not only attributes of God, but they're desires deeply inscribed in the human heart. They're written within our heart. They draw us towards God because of a reflection of God's own nature. Today, we're talking a little bit about beauty. Beauty transcends, I think, the not just the aesthetic, but it pulls back the veil. It glimpses heaven itself. Have you ever stood before a breathtaking landscape, a beautiful masterpiece? You felt something stir in your heart? That's beauty. It draws you towards God. And the church sees beauty as a path to God, who is beauty itself. So they're all connected. The good, the true, the beautiful, they're interconnected. And they lead to the other and ultimately to God. So I'm joined today by Anthony Visco, a man who has immersed himself in beauty. He is a very gifted artist, and it's always a delight to have him here with me. As I said, he teaches art in Florence, Italy, one of the most beautiful cities in the world. And you can check him out at anthonyviscoartist.com. I was struck by that article I read, Anthony, as I reflect on beauty being an antidote and truth and goodness to the problems of our culture. This person said, you want to make a difference in your country, how can you do that? Landscape, right? Make your home beautiful, dress beautifully. I mean, do these things that bring beauty to those around you. Your thoughts on that? How can beauty transcend and ultimately transform?
I think by finding the use of it, and that's part of the problem we're facing right now across the culture on every level. And unfortunately, it is robbing us of our Catholic patrimony by saying that this piece of artwork is, this altarpiece is too good, this statue is too good, so let's put it in a museum. Because we've unfortunately gone down to a very low value where it's only valuable if it's useless. So we've lost the sense of usefulness of beauty. And once that sets in, that's how we're losing our Catholic masterpieces to museums. They render it useless, and we've got to be responsible for that within the church itself and say, I've seen places where they don't let their reliquaries go to museums. They keep them in storage and things like that, vestments, etc. We just can't say it's too beautiful to wear, it's too beautiful to use. Then we're part of the problem here. But I do agree with the do it in your home, do it in your dress, do it in your garden, make it as beautiful as possible, because I do think it invites truth and goodness as well. And when you were on Breakthrough, what struck me was this morning I got a call from a friend of mine who's raised Orthodox Jew. He's not practicing any longer, and he has been sort of like the grand marshal of this Easter parade in Philadelphia, where they give prizes to kids for best dressed. And, I remarked to him, I said, our holy days, especially Easter, has been so appropriated by secularism. I said, the whole idea of dressing for Easter was, and putting on, being as beautiful as you could be as you enter into the sacred mysteries at Mass,
all new clothing after 40-day fasting and abstinence. So the whole sign and symbol of dressing well has disintegrated in that sense as well. So he didn't know any of this. And I said, how would you like if some, you know, like Purim just turned into, oh, yeah, they make Hamantash. Oh, well, Buddha, they're just cookies. Everybody gets reduced to that, you know, just go and get some Keeblers. That's all right. That's what we've done, and we've allowed it to happen. We have to really kind of resist as much as possible.
I'm with you. Let's do this. We only have a few minutes. I'll grab a few calls for you, too. I'd love you to respond. We'll start in Vienna, Ohio. Albert is up first. Albert, you're on the air with Anthony Visco. Good afternoon.
Hello, Anthony and Drew. Hey, I just want to make a couple quick comments, and that is I belong to a parish in Vienna, Ohio. It's run by the priestly order of St. Peter, mm-hmm. and I want to make a comment about these churches that are being built today, mm-hmm. a lack of beauty.
I agree.
And they put the tabernacle in the back someplace in the janitor's closet. That really irks me. Yeah. We need to bring back beauty and love into that church all over, in the way we dress, in our homes.
Yep.
We're missing it. Amen. We're missing out. Everything that you've been saying, I agree 100%.
Well, thank you, Albert. And let's pick up on that point there. Anthony's been responsible for some incredible contributions to the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe in La Crosse, Wisconsin. I would argue it's one of the most beautiful of the churches that we have in our country here. You know, Anthony, I have a chance to pray in a couple different churches, and some of them have not even a statue. They look, if I walked into this, it would look like it was a Protestant church in the round, right? It doesn't elevate my spirit. It you know, sometimes it's a little bit harder to make that God connection. Meanwhile, my chapel here at the network is so incredibly beautiful. When I walk into it, I feel like I've stepped into another dimension. Or if I pray at, let's say, the National Shrine of St. Maximilian Kolbe or at Our Lady of Champion in Wisconsin or someplace like that, there's something about beauty that just, I don't know, it stirs the heart and raises it to God. Your thoughts on what happened? This was an experiment, I'm assuming, that we thought we would strip the marble away and the altar kneelers, take out the statues. Thinking what? And how successful has that been? And are we getting back to the fact that we need to reinstate some beauty into these facilities?
It was an experiment, and it was exactly what Pope Pius XII called it. And he said this to the architects after World War II. The church is not about experiment. It's about invention. What happened in terms of the tabernacle being cast to the side or somewhere else, that was a specific ruling where if, for example, here in Philadelphia, we have the Cathedral of Saints Peter and Paul, next to where we have the chapel, that you don't have duplicity here. You don't have tabernacle here, tabernacle there with the Holy Eucharist in reserve. So the tabernacle is reserved in the chapel. However, when Mass is being said in the cathedral, in the main sanctuary, it's brought from one to the other. But the idea of putting it to the side was, yes, if you have a side chapel, but not just to, you know, it destroys the idea of something being centered and central. Yeah. Eucharist is central.
Well, Anthony, thank you. Central. Thanks for being here. I got to leave it right there. I'm out of time. I'm going to pray the chapel to Divine Mercy. I'll pray for you and your intentions. Keep up your good work. I hope we have a chance to talk again soon.
That'll be great. Take care now.
That's Anthony Visco. I've got to hold it right there. We'll pray the chaplet of Divine Mercy. When I return, feel free to join me for that. The number to get in, 888-914-9149.